Welcome back to Upstate and Par Fitness. My name is Brian Devins. I'm here today with Tom Davis, Dana Ciriano, and Terry Nelson, coaches on the Upstate and Par Fitness coaching staff. Really happy to be here, guys. One of the most common questions I get asked is, what should I be doing, cutting or bulking? You guys ever get that question asked to you?
Once or twice. And by once or twice, I mean a lot.
A time or two.
Maybe not asked directly, but maybe more so just saying, I want to look like this or I want to look like this. And
from a coaching perspective, I get the question asked, should I cut or should I bulk? More so from my clients that I already work with, that have already been through phases. From new clients, it's not even a question. It's 99% of the time is I want to cut. And that was the biggest, this was probably the biggest reason I wanted to do this podcast, is to talk about bulking and cutting, and recomp, which is another word that we talk about quite a bit. We've heard it several times, you know, over the last decade, probably more. And it was more of this magical, mythological term used in the day, but now we have a ton of data support that this can actually occur. At the rate at which it occurs has a lot to do with programming, obviously. But I think before we even get started in this podcast, I think we should probably define the terms between cutting and bulking. So for our listeners that have no idea what we're talking about, or the people that listen or hear the word bulk and immediately get nervous to do that, don't. These are very normal phases in a diet if your goal, you know, entails you to have to bulk. So, and we'll go into all that stuff and talk about our experiences as coaches, talk about our experiences as going through these phases, because each one of us at this table has actually gone through that phase once or twice at least. So Terry's gone through these cycles quite a bit of time, so we'll be able to talk about our own personal experiences and ultimately where we are today. I think each of us have at least 10 years of lifting experience under our belt at this point, if not more. I know I say a little bit more. Tom does. Dana, Terry, you guys do too. But just for numbers' sake, and I can tell you where I'm at now is not where I was 10 years ago, by any stretch of the imagination. And I was one of those people who was, you know, I want to cut, but never really asked myself, okay, should I cut or bulk, or, you know, what is the difference between the two? So, Dana, can you define what cutting actually is? What is cutting?
Yeah, so cutting would mean that you're like purposely trying to lose weight, preferably fat. So you're therefore just eating in a calorie deficit, probably doing more cardio as well. Yep. Bulking, on the opposite end, you would be purposely trying to gain weight, not necessarily fat, preferably muscle, but a little bit of fat does come with that as well. So you would be eating in a calorie surplus, maybe doing a little bit less cardio.
Yeah, good. So basically when we cut, obviously from an aesthetic standpoint, generally we're doing this for health purposes, or we're doing these for aesthetic purposes.
Or competition.
Or competition. And we're going to cutting weight too. So specifically weight, when we talk about a cutting phase, generally when we work with somebody that's looking for aesthetic change, we're talking about fat loss. And there is a stark difference between fat loss and weight loss. Which we'll also get into as well throughout this podcast. But when we talk about for cutting, I'm generally talking about fat loss for someone that's looking for body fat reduction while preserving as much muscle mass as possible. And doing that can be tricky for a lot of people. I think as coach, we kind of find ourselves like, yeah, it's okay, we're going to lose body fat. It's a pretty simple thing with a proper training and a proper nutritional approach and a proper, you know, program as a whole. You can achieve that relatively easily, as long as adherence is good. You know, and finding ways to enhance adherence obviously is the challenging part for a lot of folks. So, mm-hmm. And as far as bulking goes, I obviously, just like Dana said, those are, you know, it's a rough term for a lot of people. Nobody wants to say I'm going to bulk, because
a lot of people have a big misconception about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of us use the terms bulk, reverse diet, lean gain, maybe interchangeably. And they are a little bit different, but essentially follow the same
It all comes plan. Down to just being calorie surplus, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, and just if any listeners have any apprehension about being in caloric surplus, I've done it on a number of occasions, and the most I've ever weighed is 123 pounds.
Well, yeah, so a perfect example.
Yeah, you can be in a caloric Instagram. Surplus, but you have to remember that your coach is going to program you appropriately for a caloric surplus, so you won't be, you know, gaining excess body fat and being aesthetically unpleasing. You'll be
you're not going to get to go out and eat McDonald's three times a day. Like, you're still going to be on a regimented diet. You just might be eating a little bit more than you normally would.
And first thing that comes into my mind, which was what I was going to say, was going to your Instagram. You recently posted your reverse diet, and your calories nearly what doubled almost.
Yeah,
and your physique, I mean, showed notable improvements, but there, I don't think there was really any fat gain.
Not that I'm aware of. I'm still about the same weight. I maxed out. Like, I got to a point where I couldn't really eat much more comfortably. Yeah,
and that happens often.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a misconception. People think bulking, like, oh, I'm going to get bulky. And there's a difference between bulking and being bulky. They're not the same thing.
For the most part, most people that do want to go through a bulking phase are looking to become as bulky as possible, but in a healthy way. And I'm not talking about dirty bulk, which was a term where you just eat everything in sight as much as possible. Avoid treadmills. Like, don't even look at them because you will have, you know, rub off of cardio.
Lose your gains.
Totally lose your gains. So.
And I think men and women see that differently, because it's funny. I was reading something earlier and it talked about how you don't hear women saying, oh my God, you know, look at their back, look at their legs. They're just, I want to look, quote, toned. So right. They see it differently. But I mean, in order to get that, quote, toned look, I mean, you're going to have to be eating in a surplus in order to put on some mass.
Right. So. And going through those phases, because we live in an instant gratification type era where everything's in the palm of our hand. I've said this time and time again. But when it comes to the process of changing body composition, I mean, there's phases that have to go through in order to get that look. And then for a lot of people, they get through a few of these phases and they realize, like, I don't need that look. I'm really happy with what I have and I'm comfortable with in my own skin. And I think everyone can agree at this table, like, if you get a client that says that and, you know, and truly feels that way, I mean, that's a win.
Yeah.
You know, that's a win for sure. I want to talk a little bit about cutting. And again, like I said, a lot of people that are listening to this are probably thinking they want to cut. And, I understand. We look at obesity across the U.S., across the world. I mean, the rates are pretty high, obviously. And then on top of that, we have social pressures from social media. One big one today is like TikTok videos and Instagram videos that are now like pretty much TikTok videos of these people promoting a certain look. And I'm noticing more now. Males looking for a certain physique that weren't the same as like when I was growing up in like 2004 to 2006, where everyone looked like Jay Cutler or Ronnie Coleman. Mm-hmm. It's on the contrary, like totally reverse.
Like everyone wants to compete in board shorts now. And they want to go for that men's physique look.
Yep.
You don't find a lot of guys trying to be 280 pounds ripped out of their mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or and for me, it's like if I see someone if you guys watch like Barstool Sports or anything like that, or they do this podcast with like these younger kids that are on TikTok and they take these like ultra filtered photos of themselves, and then you see them in person and they look like they're 145 pounds.
Oh, I'm sure. I think that's a lot of people these days.
Yeah. So, sadly. I mean, obviously just going looking at it, I think it over throughout history, we've always looked at media and people have always looked at media and kind of glorified what they see in magazines, and now it's just obviously in your face, you know, 24/7, especially if you have a smartphone that has apps like Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, whatever it might be. So
if we're being honest, you know, I have clients come to me saying that they want to gain muscle, so they're looking to gain. I have clients that want to do fat loss. I also have a lot of clients lately coming to me that want to recomp, which is where you essentially program calories to maintenance level, and then you just increase your activity and train strategically. I have a lot of those. But what really kills me with all of that is people who aren't in a position to do the thing that they want to do. So someone who comes to you and they say, "Oh, I want to lose fat, but I just wrapped up a fat loss period 8 weeks ago, and I kind of fell off and binge ate for a couple of weeks there." Or, you know, people who already have excess body fat and they're like, "I need to bulk up," and it's like, "Do you though?" So I think that's the biggest challenge as a coach, is when you have someone who has a goal that doesn't really align with where they're currently positioned, mm-hmm. and then trying to message that. I don't know if you have that struggle.
No, I absolutely do. Or I have clients that come to me. I have a lot of clients that are wanting to lose fat. And, you know, it's 1-2 weeks into their program and they are inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And I get the, I don't understand why I'm not seeing results. And you try and pin it in their minds, you know, like, and this, I say it right off the bat, you know you signed up for X amount of weeks, but I do want to tell you this is just the beginning. Mm-hmm. I look bigger picture. And you're unfortunately not going to get your dream physique in 1 or 2 weeks, especially if you're not being consistent. Yeah. I think that's tough for a lot of people to come to terms with. And again, with mainstream media, that's because that's not what you see out there.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it.
I'm just curious, like, so obviously, you know, for listeners, Dana and I, we kind of deal with, we have some competitors, we have a lot of individuals who want to get into shape for aesthetic or health reasons, but we don't deal with like a lot of strength athletes. So mm-hmm. I guess this question is more like for Tom. So do you get this malarkey from your strength athletes that we deal with?
The biggest thing when dealing with like powerlifters is you get these guys who say, well, I want to cut to 181 or I want to lift at 220. But really they weigh like 200 or they weigh like, you know, 240 something, and like they'd have to lose 15-20 pounds to drop into the next lower weight class. And the question that I always have back to them is, well, why? And ultimately it's like, well, I think I can do better. But all you're doing is you're going down the road, you're competing here in Utica against, you know, it's not high level competition. I'm sorry, everybody, Utica is not high level competition.
Well, and so I would
we have high level competition in the city, but when you're doing small meets, there's no sense in jeopardizing
if
your potential outcome in your total just because you want to weigh a certain weight.
That's what I was just going to say. I would think that at some point, depending how much you're cutting or at what rate, you're going to compromise some strength.
That's exactly what happens. And fundamentally, the reason why you compete in powerlifting is to compete against yourself, to be better than yourself. And if you're losing weight, you're going to lose strength. That's just how it happens. So why, if you want to set your best total possible, why would you want to lose weight?
That's a really interesting point. So you said it's you versus yourself. So I've coached, you know, a couple of bodybuilding athletes. And the thing there is it's also you versus yourself. But we see a lot of people who think that 6 months for a bodybuilding off season is sufficient to gain, you know, 5 or 10 pounds of muscle. That's not the case. And I've had a number of uncomfortable conversations with people saying, you know, I know that you just competed and you want to compete again in 6 months, but that's not going to be sufficient off-season time for you to reach these goals. So there are some parallels there.
Yeah. Well, and that's right on par with, you know, people that should be bulking or people that should be cutting, vice versa. I think a lot of people have an unrealistic expectation of what they want to look like over what period of time it would take. For example, 6 months, like you said, that's not very long. So to try and bulk for 6 months and then get back into a cut, no. Keep on that bulk for, I would say, double that time.
And let's be real here too, Terry. You can also kind of put into play here that if you have an athlete that has achieved stage length, okay, and we can talk about the horror stories and train wrecks that happen after competition, which is vastly reported across anyone that's ever done competitive bodybuilding, physique, figure, whatever it may be. Coming off of shows is probably one of the most challenging things for that anyone will go through when it comes to just emotional battles. And what happens after 6 months is, you go into a bulking phase because you're no longer holding yourself accountable to people around you, yourself, the show's over. And when someone's eating, sees you eating something that might be a little unconventional dieting food or putting a little fluff on, you know, you feel bad, and then you get 6 months in this, and you feel that you've made necessary gains, but a lot of that's probably a driving factor of, I'm not happy with where I'm at, I'm finally, okay, 6 months into, I'm sick of it. So there's a lot of factors that come to play. There are certainly people that think they can achieve significant muscle mass gains in a short amount of time. How many people do you see hop show to show to show? I've experienced it just in specifically the natural bodybuilding circuit, of people doing 3-4 shows and only giving themselves 3 to 4 months between. That's like, that's absurd. That type of direction.
I don't know if this is still common, but I remember like 10 years ago when I was really getting into it, people used to think that you could add 1 pound of muscle a week. And like even the guys taking anabolics are not adding a pound of muscle a week.
Yeah. No, and to put it into perspective for our listeners, I mean, I've been competing since 2015. My off seasons are 18 to 24 months. And that's just to gain like, you know, like single digit pounds of muscle. And there's also body fat gain on top of that. So keep that in mind. So, I mean, realistically, if you're not using any PEDs, like that's what you're looking forward to. If you really want to progress, you're talking about like a year, year and a half, 2 years. Yeah.
So like every 2 years, your stage weight goes up like less than 10 pounds.
Oh, God, no. The last time my stage weight went down, but that was a completely separate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was hard. That was a little bit more hardcore than she's ever gone, that's for sure. And another thing that we talk about when we specifically talk about like female athletes, and most female athletes will go through this, and there's a lot of research to support this, and there's a lot of registered dietitians that have spoken on the fact of something called Red S, which is an acronym for relative energy deficiency in sports, which is more of a common term for men and women. But there's a female athlete triad, which is basically three symptoms that people have, like that ultimately develop amenorrhea and bone density loss from dieting, from available energy restriction. So when you start seeing this and seeing these chronic dieters, I like to call them, these are serious medical health issues that can develop, and you don't know that it's occurring. Because when you start doing these hardcore dieting, what's actually happening, specifically with like bone density loss, we start seeing this early onset of osteoporosis over a short amount of time. You can get away with it, but when you look at like the ages in which you're building the most muscle or bone density between like 20 and 35, those are vital times for people to build this structure of their bones, but then they're dieting hardcore throughout generally those ages. You're not going to get that back, even with resistance training, which will also obviously help against and fight against osteoporosis. But when you start losing bone density, it's a major issue to think about. And it's things we don't think about until it's almost too late. So those conversations that have to be had with people that want to compete and go right one show after another, because they're chasing that dangling carrot of whether it's a pro card or it's a first place or it's the attention that they're getting from external sources. I think that's a driving factor for a lot of athletes, and I think it's a driving factor for anyone that really comes to the gym. I think there's some, not everyone, I should never say that, but there's a lot of external factors that come into play for this. And obviously men can obviously fall victim to some health concerns as well, but generally for the majority of people, I do see this happen quite a bit in females, and whether that's just, you know, aesthetic things or whatever it is, but these things need to be taken into consideration.
I think that should be taken into consideration too, not only with women that are looking to compete, but also women that are just looking to chronically diet. I mean, that might happen on a longer scale, but you're still kind of going down that path of being osteoporotic. I mean, if you're competing, obviously it's a more of an aggressive cut in a shorter amount of time, so those that might be expedited, but... Yeah.
That's a great point. I think people need to, you know, keep that in mind, because the only difference between like a contest prep and a very strict diet is you're really just talking about, you know, a few grams in either direction. So like, for example, in contest preps, I will lose my period for up to a year. I'll have night sweats, hair loss, weird things. I mean, so when you're dieting very strenuously, these are all lovely side effects that you can look forward to. I don't know from the male perspective. I know you did a show.
Yeah, we can. I mean, listen, there's details out there, especially when you're doing these things naturally, is reduction in hormone levels, whether it be... Now, my thyroid actually stayed normal. I did blood panels throughout the entire thing, but my testosterone went down to 173. I think that was my free test, which is...
What's the normal range, do you know?
Between 300 and 1,000. So I was that of a 95-year-old male. That's what my doctor told me. So, yeah, it was an... I can make many comments on this, but yes, it was not a great time. And obviously with that comes some side effects of having low testosterone, whether it's depression and things like that. Now I didn't diet to the point where, I had any thyroid suppression. So that was good.
You're lucky in that
so,
sense.
But yes, there is things, and obviously there's tons of research, even from, you know, going the bulking route, or we're going the calorie restriction route. We're looking at like studies with, participants that have a history of anorexia nervosa. So obviously we can draw some conclusions from that and what happens to people when they diet soup, like, you know, extreme dieting. Obviously there's many factors in that. That's a rabbit hole that we're not going to go down on that today, but obviously, you know, things can happen, and those are things that need to be spoken about, because some females are a little different than others. Some can go through, I can tell you right now, like Alyssa can go through a contest prep, have minimal reduction in hormones. She may have experienced a little, like a month or two of amenorrhea, but once refeeding process starts, she's back to normal. I can say that all my athletes at this point, whether they want a reverse diet or not, we strongly encourage a recovery diet, which is a gigantic jump in calories. And I believe that more now, having experience with clients, than I did when I first started, because obviously reverse dieting was a thing. And not only was it a thing, it was more of a, you know, people wanted to remain aesthetic and put on some mass. So assuming the person's healthy, or could you do a reverse diet? But I mean, they're just long and they're just dragged out. And we go into the competitive bodybuilding stuff in a little bit too. So I'll make some notes on lean gaining, but
your points are an excellent reminder of why, for example, like Dana and I think we're kind of on the same page. I love to set people to maintenance to start and see how much they can accomplish just working at maintenance level. Yeah. So why get into digging deep into fat loss and prolonged suffering when you could very well make amazing progress? I put up a post not too long ago, 4 weeks of just maintenance calories for a couple of my clients, and they took inches off their body. So you can really accomplish a lot without having to dig that deep. So I think that's an excellent reminder.
That's something, one of my goals with all of my clients is to achieve as much progress as we can with the smallest amount of changes. Because if you are decreasing calories and increasing cardio, you get to a point and you have nowhere to go from there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, with adaptive responses, the idea would be where, how many calories can I get away with and make progress? So it's a good point to make, because I will tell you guys in my experience as a coach now that I've used a multitude of different approaches with different people. And a lot of it has to do after interviewing a client and actually getting to hear their experiences as into dieting. I know that if I have a client that is going to thrive off of the scale, which is, in my opinion, is not necessarily the best way to look at things, but I will tell you.
Can you say that again? Yeah, say it louder for the people in the back.
Say it louder for the people in the back. We're going to go over some research on the scale too, guys. I really want to, I got a couple research articles that I pulled up that will reference those things when we get into the recomposition portion of this podcast. But I will say that I have used tactics on clients where I know that seeing initial weight loss is going to enhance adherence.
Yeah.
And then when we bring calories up after 2 weeks of seeing that scale drop and we're, you know, adherence is still going well, they're still losing weight. And all of a sudden it's like, I'm eating more, I'm doing less cardio, I'm still losing weight. And then the light switch kind of flips for them. Now, it's a pretty bold move to make. But again, there's been times where I've used that with success. There's been times where I've had to convince people that we're just not going to start out on low calories, because I will say that when you have someone that does chronic dieting, that if they're legitimately eating what they say they're eating, there are adaptive responses that most people go through. So if you're eating 900 calories, and by all calculations I'm using, you should be eating 2,100 calories, giving them 2,100 calories off the bat and not explaining to them, they may see a bump in the scale off the first week or two, is going to be a hard conversation to have. And having those conversations ahead of time and getting people to understand, like, less is not always more in terms of fat loss.
Right.
On the contrary, if you want to lose a significant amount of body fat, a noticeable amount of body fat, give yourself time, start calories high. I've always said that since day one, really.
So that way you have somewhere to go.
Maintenance is a good option. Even a hair above maintenance. And
obviously
you got other options of cardio and how many days they train. But
there's also a lot of value. And this is something that this is like a new thing just from like going through school and some of the things that I've learned. There's a lot of value in speaking to people about what diet culture really is. So that's where a lot of these beliefs that we have come from. Oh, I need to be on 900 calories. I need to do 6 hours of cardio. Like, no, that's what you've seen on TV or infomercials or whatever, like, or Instagram. That's not necessarily what your body really needs. It's not necessarily healthful. You know, don't believe the propaganda.
Yeah, I agree with that. How about this? Fasted cardio. This was always this thing that I used to, before I got like really big into the science that goes into fat loss, when I saw someone doing fasted cardio, my instant thought was, I was kind of motivated and almost like, man, like how does somebody get to that point where they're that strict and regimented? Almost like I can look at them as like, it's kind of badass. Like this person gets up every morning, eats dirt, and then hops on a treadmill and just walks.
What? How?
4 o'clock like, in the morning before everyone else is, because there's a certain allure to in my person, my personality thrives off that I'm willing to go the extra mile to do things. Knowing that, first of all, I'd be the first. I can't sit here and tell you that I won't go the extra mile to do things because I have an absurd schedule, and I will do that. However, it needs to be well calculated, and it's not through fasted cardio. I can tell you that right now.
I train fasted, and I usually do cardio after my lifts. So in the morning, I usually get here about 4:30, 4:40. I train fasted because I want to, not because of any benefit. And that's something that, like you said, fasted cardio, you think it's magical. Yeah. And it's not. I mean, I'm used to it. I usually eat my last meal like around 7, 8 o'clock, and then I'm in bed by like 8:30,
so you're probably not even technically fasted.
Right, because I'm up at 3:34 and I come right here. So, I mean, for me, it works. It
doesn't
works
affect
because
performance.
It works.
And
with some things, like, for example, I do rack pulls because deadlifting, I'm too tired. And for purposes of time, I don't have time to warm up.
Yeah, no doubt.
Same with squatting. So I'll use the bear squat instead, just because purposes of time. But at this point, I'm used to it. It's been, I don't know, at least a year that I've been training in the morning. So I've adapted to it.
Sure.
I think it's different, though. You're doing it because of preference, and that's what you, that's what works for you. I know for me, I won't even take a conference call fasted. Like, I don't do anything fast. Even when I'm in contest prep and I have, like, poverty macros, I just won't eat all day and then slam all my food right before the workout to have a decent workout. Like, so I think you kind of have to take into consideration people's personal preferences, but...
not because it's magical.
But if you were sitting here saying, well, I do everything fasted because it's going to, like, enhance my fat loss
and
or something,
no.
I'd be like, Dana, no. You know?
Brian, you actually had a post a while back about how being in the fasted state enhances mental clarity and focus, right?
It does.
For who? But,
I can see
these are also anecdotal too. I mean, there's a lot
of kind of goes back to the hunter gatherer, you know, times when when they had to chase the food, they were usually in a fasted state and they were like more outgoing and more driven to actually.
It's a play on the sympathetic nervous system.
Right.
Whereas if you were fed state, you're playing.
Think
on the
about how you feel after a meal.
But I think like
things
for lifting
in a
fasted state. It's probably not ideal, right?
No, definitely not.
Your muscles are screaming for glycogen, but the most readily available store of glycogen without food in your system is your muscles.
Right.
So you're destroying your muscles to try to build your muscles. It seems like it's
Also, it's important to note, it depends on your approach. I mean, let's put it this way. It takes, if you look at research and actually what happens or how much it takes to actually fully deplete glycogen, it's quite a bit. So if someone's on like restricted low carbohydrates, I'm talking 120 grams of carbohydrates a day. I feel like you could probably, you can even go as low as some people have been on 60. Then we talk about keto diets, things like that. I mean, I think we can
Would depend on like your daily intake in addition to like the hours between, I would say, your last meal and maybe when you are training.
My advice to anyone that is fasted, it's probably the improper term to use is strictly fasted. It's always been, if you're training early in the morning and you don't want to open up your feeding window at 4 o'clock in the morning, to have a higher carb meal before you went to bed or your final meal of the day. Just so, you do have some of those, you know, some additional glycogen and some additional food in your system.
But just for our listeners, so you've got like what, four of us here and we've all said something kind of different. So this is the value of having a coach, right? Because you can bounce ideas off your coach and say, hey, you know, I don't like to train full of food at 4 a.m. That's not my thing. And your coach can advise you on what that training would look like. Similarly, I'm one of those people, I have to have at least 90 grams of carbs before a workout or else the workout doesn't happen. Like I need to have that in my system, you know, so everyone's different. Having a coach can personalize your protocol for you.
Yeah.
I do want to point out like in Dana's case where she's training in a fasted or semi-fasted state, it's maybe not optimal, but she's still always in that state every time she lifts. So as long as she's seeing progress in that state and she's consistently in that state, you're still seeing good progress. And it, just because it's not optimal, as long as you're seeing progress, then you're making progress.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. And I mean, I'm at a point, I'm not trying to put on muscle. I'm just maintaining at this point. I mean, I'm eating maintenance calories. I'm doing a little bit of cardio because I like it. And because, I mean, yay for cardiovascular health.
It's good for your skin.
Yeah, and because I like to sweat. But I mean, I would say if you're someone that's trying to put on muscle, it's like you said,
yeah,
not
if you're
going
like
to be
a,
ideal,
if you're in the strength sports, it's
yeah.
probably not a good idea to train.
No, and absolutely not. Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't go from training in the evening or being fed to training in the morning. You're going to see a significant drop in what you're able to push.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, we're going to do another podcast on what's the best time to train. We'll get into that.
Oh, that's so individual, and that's a great topic because it's different for everybody. You know what I mean? I've tried working out at 3 and 4 in the morning. I found that although I can pull it off, it's not amazing. I train better at night. But then again, like, have either of you guys ever, you know, you work out at a certain time of day and then you have to switch it for some reason, and it's like
it feels weird.
You get your shoes on the wrong feet. It feels like it just feels awkward.
Yeah, I used to try to do 2-a-days, and I found that, like, I could not do, like, high-intensity stuff in the morning. It wouldn't work for me.
Yeah.
Let's wrap up on the cutting aspect of this. I just want to make a really important thing, too, because obviously we were talking about the social media drive to look a certain way. And I can say I sound blue in the face. It's not going to change anything for a lot of people. But I think that it's really important to focus on achieving something rather than trying to change yourself. So when you look at someone and you want to be lean or have abs, so I have a client that says, I want to look like Terry, or I want to look like Dana, or I want to look like Tom. Okay, we're going to achieve your best version, but, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is don't, like, hate yourself for what you look like now. Like,
or what you don't look like because you're not someone else. And that's something
that... Focus on the achievement aspect of this.
I've told my clients time and time again, you know, it's great to, you know, look to someone and look up to them and maybe use them as your motivation, but, like, you are not them. So let's try and work to achieve your best you. And not try and achieve something that really is kind of out of reach.
I feel like people come into the coaching process with this assumption that they're, like, deficient in some way, or they're unwhole, or there's something wrong with them. And it's like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you the way that you are. We're literally just adding on to how great you already are. So we're going to make you stronger. We're going to make you healthier. You're going to have better self-confidence, but you're not actually going to be better. You're just going to feel better.
Yeah.
That's all there is to
it. I think the achievement being unlocked for a lot of people is just learning how to shuttle discipline in the right places. And for a lot of people, discipline, or, and that's an aggressive term, is just self-control, is kind of the one thing that people get, you know, become the way they are, they become the things they dislike about themselves most. From a physical standpoint. So learning how to self-control, but enjoy that position as well is kind of where you want to be.
And the last thing I would like to say about cutting, just, you know, my soapbox. If you're cutting and you discover halfway through the cut, well, this is miserable and I'm not having fun anymore and I'm not feeling good about myself anymore, stop the cut. It's totally okay. Your coach is always going to support you in changing your objective. So if the cut is becoming unpleasant or unbearable, you're totally fine to go to your coach and say, hey, I want to switch gears. I want to take a new approach. No coach is going to say, no, we can't do that.
Yep. Agreed. Well, hold on. I will build off this. I may, and I'll be done after this, I may tell you to continue on if specifically you're going through a phase where you're not happy aesthetically. Because what happens to a lot of people, specific from the physique athlete or someone that's going for specific sports-specific training, they get to this point where they're 6 or 7 weeks into their fat loss phase or their cut, and they start saying, I don't like the way I look. We talked about this earlier, Tom.
Yeah,
I don't like, I feel small, I am shriveled, I don't like the way I look, I need to bulk. Boom. I think it's important to note that if we are losing, we need 40 pounds to lose and we lost, you know, 2, versus we only have 5 pounds, you know, to lose and we have lost 2, that's a gigantic difference in percentage base. So the visual appearance of fat loss is going to differ. One, you're on less calories. You may feel a little bit more flat. Your muscles may not be as full. You might not be filling out the large or extra large shirts anymore. But you're in this phase that a lot, it's commonly across, you know, social media. I've heard it since like 2011, is the tweener phase.
I've never heard this.
Tweener phase.
I've never heard
and
this.
You're in between your bulk and your end stage of cut. And a lot of people psychologically become damaged because they feel like that they've just lost. They didn't do anything during their bulking phase. And then they automatically think, I need to get back into a surplus and I need to start lifting heavier again because I look terrible. You won't notice those changes in your physique until you get to a certain body fat percentage. And then I promise you'll probably be happy with that. So I just wanted to build on that because there will be people that may come to me that want to stop their cut specifically because they feel like they don't look good or they compare themselves now to what they weighed the last time they were in a cut or whatever it might be.
It's also totally possible. Like you lose weight and, you know, maybe you don't look better. Some people don't look better. Some people don't necessarily look visually more appealing.
Well, and you're also so used to them looking
they're probably
way.
Healthier. Their health markers have probably improved, but aesthetically looking at them, they don't like look better. So people,
especially with people with massive weight loss and obviously, the health markers are probably the most important thing when you're losing weight that much. But I've heard that. You know, I have a couple clients now who have lost weight, have done a show. You would never know it, but they do have loose skin. And when you're putting on a bikini, it's kind of hard to hide. But they've done amazing things. All right, let's talk a little bit about recomposition, that flashy term that most people say they're going to do. Recomposition is probably one of my favorite things to have people go through or what we strive to go through. Obviously, when you have a well-designed program, these things do happen. So just to give the definition of what body recomposition is when you are simultaneously or building more muscle and losing fat at the same time. And it's not necessarily going to happen in everyone, but we do see this in quite a few people. In fact, I kind of expect it to happen to all my clients that are starting out with me that are at or just below the intermediate level.
Yeah, I think I was just thinking to myself, a lot of times with people that are novice lifters and whose body weight is on the lower scale, they come to you and they want to cut. And it's like, no, you don't need to cut. I mean, you... And I hate to use the term, and I mean this in the least derogatory way possible, but skinny fat. You know, you don't have much muscle. You really don't even have body fat either. You're just thin. You're slender.
Clients with well-distributed body fat, they have no muscle.
Yeah. That sounded nicer.
Skinny fat. Skinny fat's a good term, though. I won't hate on that.
I
expect all my clients have recomposition intermediate and below if they're training enthusiastically, okay, with purpose and properly.
That's probably my favorite approach is to set people at maintenance calories and then just increase their activity level because there's a lot of great work that can be done there. So, but I don't necessarily, some people say I want to cut and I'm like, sure, we can do that. But I know that what we're really doing is recomping. They don't need to know. And they're like, oh, why am I getting all this food? And I'm like, don't worry, it'll work. And then, you know, they're pleasantly surprised when it does work. So I think sometimes with like the people that you're describing, keeping them in the dark is almost to their benefit and just say, hey, listen, just follow this protocol. Trust me.
Because it's almost too much information at first. It's overwhelming.
And then let them get that good feeling like, oh, my gosh, I feel good. Like my weight is coming down. My pictures look good. Like things are just naturally
happening.
Or
they even see conversely, they're like, OK, my weight is maybe staying the same, but I look great. I feel great. My clothes fit different. My measurements are trending downward.
And I always tell people that, like, I wouldn't really invest too much in the number on the scale. Like, don't you really care about how your clothes fit and how you feel and how you, like, see yourself in the mirror? Isn't that what really matters? So even if your weight goes up, does it matter if you look and feel better? I don't know.
Yeah, agreed. I think to look and feel good. So a lot of questions is, okay, how are clothes fitting? Now, if you have someone that's gaining weight and their clothes are getting tighter and they're wearing bigger pants, okay.
That's an issue.
There's obviously something to dig deeper in. But most of the time, we are going to see people, losing when they first start out recomping because they're going to feel better in their clothes despite what the scale says. The scale reading, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the scale doesn't have any purpose in coaching. It certainly does. However, this is not the end-all be-all. This is not like the holy grail of what happens with body composition. There's so many other ways to do that, and that's why we have measurements and photos and things like that and just your general response on how you feel. Which carry a little bit more weight. Obviously, we start getting to a little bit more of an experienced lifter. We can kind of know based on some data over 4 to 6 weeks on where energy balance actually is And obviously, if adherence is there too. So,
question for all of you. Sure. How often do you get clients who come to you and say, I want to lose X number of pounds?
All the time.
And then,
yeah, I get that quick. Well, all the time. Not so much anymore. I mean, generally it's body fat. I want to lose body fat. You know, I could probably lose 20 pounds, yeah, referencing what their weight was at a certain point in their life prior.
So how do you deal with that situation? Because it's like, well, where'd you come up with that number?
Well, yeah. I have a client right now who came to me and she's like, well, I need to lose 40 pounds. And then she sends me photographs. And I'm looking at these photographs. I'm like, okay, so you do not need to lose 40 pounds most likely. So I said, can you walk me through, like, as I'm looking at your photos right now, I'm looking at your numbers. Can you explain to me where you got that number of 40 pounds from? And she says, well, that's the weight that I was before I had my kids. And I said, okay. I said, well, that makes sense to me. But here's the thing. I go, your body is not meant to stay the same over time. Your body is meant to change over time. And I go, so if I said to you, you know, you're going to get stronger, you're going to get leaner, your clothes are going to fit better, would it matter if you were only 15 pounds thinner? And she said, well, no, because I want to be leaner and I want to feel better. And I said, okay, so just keep that in mind. And I leave it at that. I just asked them to explain to me, where did you get that number from? And I kind of poke holes in that theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as that's that was one thing I used to always hear, like, years ago. I guess it's kind of dropped off now, but it always used to be.
Yeah, I would say it's dropped off. I'm thinking, like, when people say to me anyway, they're like, I would like to, or I feel like I should, but it's never like, I want to, and it's never very solid like that. And similar to Terry, I mean, I just approach it, you know, I understand you want that, but let's work and see what you can accomplish. And, you know, the scale isn't an end all be all. Let's focus on other things.
And the exception to that is I do have some people that say the doctor says I need to lose 65 pounds, and I just say to them, that's great information from your doctor, but one thing to keep in mind, that the BMI chart is known to be slightly flawed.
I should be just about dead.
Yeah, so I just tell them, you know, I go, let's just set some, like, objectives for performance and your health markers. We want to get your blood sugar down. We want to get your blood pressure down. Let's set some, like, really objective goals there and not worry so much about the number of pounds. Let's focus on what matters is getting you feeling better, you know. People are usually pretty receptive.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as long as they're not fixated on that being the goal, mm-hmm, the number is not the primary goal, then it's generally a pretty easy conversation to have with people. And then when you do start asking, like, so where'd that number come from? Like,
yeah. It's always, before I had my kids, that's how much I weighed when I got married. It's usually like a
special time in their life. It's a reference back to, yeah, and it could have been, you know, 5 to 10 years, and maybe they were even training, and then it's like, man, that's the number might affect what you're actually, you could look like, or what you, how you could feel about yourself, so... Yeah, I don't really get a lot of the number. I mean, I will give people an idea of where their weight would be if I'm given the proper information. Like, I can tell you right now that most of my physique athletes or clients that have I've worked with over several years, I can pretty much be within 5 pounds of where their stage weight is going to be. I can pretty much predict that accurately.
No, but, you can.
Yeah.
You always have.
Yep. So I've been comfortable doing that. First timers, no, not usually. Not their first prep, because, you know, you have these whooshes and whatnot that go through, that you go through during prep, that, like, holy crap, somebody's lost 4 pounds overnight. Like, what happened there? So again, the scale could be, you know, it's hard. It could be the devil, or it could be the angel for a lot of people. So in terms of making progress, or again, enhancing adherence, I think that's the primary thing here, is that people use the scale to enhance adherence, and it's not the best thing. And I think I've said this on several podcasts before, probably the fourth time I'm going to reference this, is if you can live or die by the sword being the scale.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
You can't trust the scale. There's been times I've gotten into the hot sauce and weighed in 4 pounds heavier the next day, and I didn't, like, go over my macros or anything. I just got into the hot sauce.
Yeah, really cool.
Can't trust the scale.
Also, let's note this on body recomposition, because we're not pulling this from our ass here, where this is actually researched. It's well-researched. There is one study that I reference here, which is there was overweight police officers. I had to use the study because of police officers. started a weight training program. Now, they were untrained individuals. They lost 9.3 pounds of fat and gained 8.8 pounds of lean body mass. Body recomposition was had at roughly 1.5 pounds net growth or gain. There is research, too, for trained individuals, too. So, obviously, we have it happens multiple times. There's one I reference here on elite gymnasts gained 0.9 pounds of lean body mass and had a 2.6% reduction in body fat after only 30 days. So elite gymnasts, they're training like 4 or 5 days a week, And I think they had him on a pretty low calorie diet, which was right around like 1900 to 1975 calories per day, which is low for someone that's, if you know elite gymnasts, it's not, they're going to the gym for 45 minutes. I mean, they are there for, you know, a significant amount of time, 4 days a week. So
it's important to note that recomposition gets harder the more advanced you are and also the leaner you are. So it's very easy for, like in the police officer's case where they're untrained, for an untrained individual to mm-hmm. rapidly lose weight or lose fat and gain muscle. It'd be much harder for someone like probably most of us or all of us to do that.
It's a great, you know what a great comparison is that I've used with clients is antibiotics. So you always want to use the smallest dose necessary, but the longer you're exposed to the antibiotic, the greater the dose needs to be. It's kind of the same with exercise if you want to recomp. You're going to need more and more
yep.
in order to get the same effect.
And that same thing applies, I think, to people that have repeatedly dieted.
Oh, God, yeah.
It gets harder to cut each time mm-hmm. you go through it.
Especially if you don't reverse properly yes. or have a proper, you know, period of maintenance or surplus in there, it gets worse, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that can make it a little bit more challenging, especially people have gone through this, you know, several times over. Just the accumulation of new body fats or adipose tissues or cells as we cut and gain, because we don't necessarily get rid of the old fat cells. We just deflate them, and we can create new ones without any issue. They're very easy to create. They don't go away. They just get smaller. We deflate them. We use the whatever's inside. So, yeah, so again, body recomposition can have, Tom, very good point on letting people know that if you're a 10-year vet of the gym and you've been training and more than, maybe you have no dieting experience and you haven't been eating, you know, you've had a poor diet for the last, you know, those 10 years, then perhaps you could see some body recomposition. But if you are a seasoned vet, an athlete, Terry, probably not going to see either anyone at this table. In fact, you're probably not going to see a significant amount of body recomposition. Although there are other studies that we get into with you know, certain supplementation, that we certainly will see that. Whether we're gaining muscle or losing fat in a surplus, unlikely to happen because we'd have to gain a, you know, we'd have to gain muscle at a rate of 5.2 times faster than we were decreasing body fat, which can it happen? Sure. I've seen it happen to people. Not naturally.
Okay.
Not naturally. So, yes, it can happen. Sure, it can happen. But again, those people were on PEDs or, for people that don't know what that is, steroids. So those things can happen. I do not advise you to take steroids. Disclaimer. Okay. So, even if you want to look jacked and tan for the summer, there's other ways to do it.
So I kind of want to touch on the dieting aspect of recomp real quick, because I think it may be confusing for people where it's either like bulk cut or maintenance. So recomp, where does that fall in that scale for you guys?
So technically, and this is where we kind of not pull a fast one on our clients, but we lull them to sleep, so to speak. So we say, oh, you're a maintenance level. But not really, though. So your calories are set to maintenance, but we program you.
Technically.
Yeah, we program you
with energy expenditure.
All this great physical activity. So you're lifting enthusiastically, to Brian's point, you know, because you're not in there half-assing it. So you're enthusiastically lifting. You're doing your cardio. You're on the elliptical next to Coach Dana, and you're booking it. So technically, you are in a caloric deficit, but your calories are high enough so that it's palatable. You know what I mean? Whereas when I think cutting, I think like contest prep. I've got like double digit carbs. I hate everybody. 4 hours of cardio every week. Like, so maintenance calories just it is a caloric deficit basically okay. because of the activity level.
So recomp was actually like a big thing like 10 or 11 years ago. It's something I tried to do, and I thought people had got away from it, but now it seems to be coming back. But back in the day, the diet used to be higher calorie days on the days you lifted versus lower calorie days on the days you had off. Is that something you guys do?
Sometimes we do that. Yeah.
This is good. I mentioned that because there's a lot of research that actually contradicts what that approach was, because I can remember specifically being on a diet that actually manipulated protein source or protein intake on certain days or the other. So like I'd have, you know, 1.8 grams per pound on, which is significantly higher than what you need. On training days versus, rest days, and I'd have about 1.2 pounds and a little bit more carbohydrate on the
nowadays
days that I've
trained. Is
Proteins
across the board, consistent.
Protein's pretty straight across the board based on lean body mass generally. So if I get an obese person, and we're gonna long term fat loss phase, it really depends. I'm not gonna put a 300-pound person on 1.2 pounds of 1.2 grams per pound of body weight off the bat because eating that much protein, just the satiety factor. Satiety factor alone, like, they're going to hate me, you know, to eat that much
protein.
I'll give
you a really common scenario. This is the one that I come across most often. So if someone's been dieting for a little while, maybe they've been working a lot at maintenance, but now they're kind of starting to get into a deeper deficit. And they'll say, man, you know, I just having a really hard time pushing through leg day. So we'll say, okay, well, then we'll give you higher carbs on your leg day. And then the other days, you know, maybe not so much. Or if someone's been working at maintenance and now we're starting to see the progress slow, maybe on a rest day where they're not doing any activity, we'll say, okay, we're going to dial the carbs down a little bit. So we do, you know, change your carbs based on your activity level. But to your point, no, we don't really manipulate protein too much.
When I manipulate training, rest, so there's 3 days that I'll generally use for people is training, rest, and refeed days. And you guys have seen these 3 days before. When I do that, so I always start people off on daily macronutrient intake, a single thing, because if I have someone that's relatively new to macro tracking or it's a new client of mine that I may require them to track in a different manner than they were before, I don't want to add any confusion to like training and rest. And I messed this day up. Now I got to do now I'm 40 less carbs here. I'm 60 less carbs today. And I'm, you know, so that offers some confusion. And that took some time because I think when you started, Dana, that I gave you training, rest, and refeeds.
Yeah.
This is back, like, this is a while ago. Yes. I was like, what the hell is this?
And I
now,
was
Dana
like
was successful. Dana killed it. Okay. But one of the feedback I got from clients was I'm struggling with training and rest and all these other days. So I'd strictly put them in there because what actually occurs as a coach is you find out the calories that the client's going to need for the entire week. Now, some people do it just on a day and they do the math and they just kind of, you're not shooting from the hip. You're getting a well educated guess into what this person's metabolic rate will be. Okay?
Well, and that's the projected thing. Like that is a range, really. So it doesn't need to be spot on.
Exactly. So we take these set calories for the week and then we distribute them how we want throughout a 7-day period.
Just to be clear, I never struggled with any of that because anytime I saw a refeed in the protocol anywhere, I was like, I will make this work.
So I will go into the rest day macronutrient protocol. So what I like to do is if I have someone that is doing well with their protocol, but we are hitting a little bit of a speed bump, okay, a plateau in progress, rather than dropping their only daily carb stores, which may have, you know, stimulate an emotional response of they're taking my food away, I like to incorporate a 2-day, which is 2 to 3 days of rest day macronutrients, where I can offset their weekly calories for the week. Now I'm giving all my tricks away, Tom. I like to offset their weekly calories by only taking the rest day macros away or adding rest day macros in because they think, okay, I have a rest day, I'm not going to use as many calories, but they're still having the same, you know, protein, carbohydrate, and fat on their training day. So we can take away their calories for the week without making a massive cut to their calories and see if we can stimulate a fat loss. Now, as far as refeeding goes, I used to give them out more often than I do now, and I do more now for namely psychological response. I will give them for contest prep athletes. I have a girl that's getting ready for a powerlifting meet who we've just incorporated refeeds, and it's more so for those people. It's about being able to handle carbohydrates digestively, and because as you deplete carbohydrates during contest prep and you have to bring those back in for, you know, it's for appearance purposes, I need to know this person knows how to choose carbohydrates and then be able to digest them as well. So if they look like a bloated mess on show day, it's not my fault because I haven't given them anything over 150 carbs in, you know, 20 weeks. So responses.
You're really not giving away our secrets though, because it's very individual. So again, the value of having the coach though is because I have clients who have kind of hit a plateau and nothing else seems to be working, or just based on the symptoms they're describing to me, I'll give them more food and boom, the weight starts falling off again. So that's why you hire us, right? Because we can kind of troubleshoot those issues based on what you're telling us the issues are. Mm-hmm. We can troubleshoot it. And sometimes you need more calories. Sometimes you need less calories. It's it's all over the place.
And with refeeds too, it's a really good topic. I mean, we could probably talk about refeeds on its own episode or calorie distribution. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you can pull from studies like the Minnesota Starvation Study and see the physiological responses from they call them 2-day overfeeding periods, which is basically a which was basically like a refeed day. Whereas they saw very little physiological response after a 24-hour, it was like a 12-hour window, one day overfeeding period. Whereas they gave somebody 2 days of overfeeding, which was about 2.5 times, I can't speak, more calories than they did on a normal week or a normal day. And they actually saw events when they started seeing the boosts in leptin. They started seeing the, you know, their hunger suppress a little bit. So that's
and that's something that I've used. I mean, I don't always prescribe refeeds. It kind of depends on the client because I do have some clients that I know won't be able to hit those calories for whatever reason it might be, or they might be afraid, or I know that maybe this client isn't going to use them to their advantage while they're training. Sure. But the 2 to 3 day refeeds, I feel like that can have a similar effect as to what you described as, I don't know if you consider that a diet break, but bringing calories maybe up a little bit. I don't know if you're bringing them back up to maintenance.
I have a couple people that are on diet breaks right now and they're still losing weight.
So. It's a good way and to structure it. So you should structure. Yeah. Structuring and diet breaks are a really good opportunity for people to understand. Like, so like now, whereas before, like if a contest prep was 20 weeks, we'd go 20 weeks into the fat loss phase and that would be it. Whereas now, like, well, what if you do like 24 and then between those, we have 2 weeks of dieting breaks throughout the process and structure those in, let the people know this is when we're doing diet breaks. So you're getting one, they know when this is coming, let's make progress till it's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, I've said this about 5 times this podcast, but the enhancing adherence for the client is kind of the position I take whenever I make a change or if it's absolutely needed, obviously.
So that's why, if any of you have ever wondered why we have that 30-page questionnaire we make you fill out, or why we play 21 questions with you, is because the better we get to know you, like Brian knows, when I do a contest prep, we're not doing diet breaks, we're not doing any of that. Like I want clear cut, 16 weeks, just just get it over with. You know what I mean? But other people, that approach may not work. So the better you know your client, you know, the more positioned they'll be for success.
Yeah, and it's another thing too, going back into the cutting phase and talking about contest prep versus lifestyle cut. You can develop problems during a lifestyle cut too if your adherence is off. Mm-hmm. Because what I find with a lot of people is they diet, they're doing well, they progress, they have a bad weekend, and they fall off. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily mean they ate more calories
sounds
than they
like
normally.
You're talking to me. Yeah.
the weekend's about almost 30% of your week, just so you know.
It's only Saturday, Brian. Just one day.
It feels like less than that.
So, you know, so the thing is we have this yo-yo diet, even though it's confined to a week.
If anyone wants to see what that looks like, go look at my Instagram.
So that post you just made about your whole winter from, Thanksgiving to Christmas?
It was up and down.
I go all the way back to March of or April.
Some large weight fluctuations in there.
Yeah.
It goes through the process of the what I'm basically trying to say to people is if you commit to a fat loss phase and you and your coach think that's the appropriate position to take, don't make this go any longer than it actually has to be. This is not a long-term thing. As a matter of fact, you're going to find yourself, if you look at this as a whole over 2 years, you should be spending more time in maintenance or in a lean or in a gaining phase than you are in a fat loss phase. That is a small portion of the picture. And the problem is that most people are spinning their wheels today because they can't find a path of that is as of the least resistance to fat loss. So and the benefits of a coach.
There's a lot of great self-improvement work to be done there. So if you are of a fairly normal weight and fairly normal body composition and you constantly find yourself tempted to cut or struggling to cut, like I would really do that deep introspective work there and think, you know, I have a BMI of 24. Like I, you know, most people would look at me and say, I look reasonably fit. Like, why do I feel these urges to cut? Why am I struggling with dieting? Like, ask yourself those questions.
Yeah, and finding the comfort. So I actually researched this study, this research study here by E. Elf Hag. Okay, apologize if I butchered that name. And he basically made a point on what is the definition of successful weight maintenance. Okay, and this is really cool because these are all points that you can look back. Yeah, that would be a successful weight maintenance. Where do I get at the end of a cut? So reaching a self-determined goal weight, having a physically active lifestyle, a regular meal rhythm, including breakfast and healthy or other eating, control over eating and self-monitoring behaviors. Weight maintenance is further associated with an internal motivation to lose weight, social support, better coping strategies, and ability to handle life stress. Self-efficacy, autonomy, assuming responsibility in life, and an overall more psychological strength and stability. So I think a lot of those things there are points that obviously you can just mark those checkboxes off. Like, yeah, like I have a strong support system. Those are probably one of the biggest things, having a strong support system around you, whether friends and family, an active lifestyle where you're not necessarily, I have to go to the gym as I want to go to the gym. Those are all things that you should check off the boxes. So if you're not someone that likes to exercise, we talked about this in the last podcast, how do we get there? Is building the support system around that and encouraging yourself to get there and seeing where your body can actually do. Like, I think that for a lot of people, seeing what my body can actually do is what is drives me. Like, wow, what can
people
I do now?
People overthink that, I feel like. Yeah. Exercise can be just about anything if you try hard enough. I mean, I've definitely seen, like my husband, he likes to lift and do other things, but he breaks a sweat playing cornhole. Like, he gets very aggressive with cornhole.
Me too.
I feel like if he wore an Apple Watch, he would burn a few hundred calories. So, I mean, if you enjoy doing something and there's a physical component to it, I would argue you could consider that exercise. I don't know.
Yep. Anything to raise the heart rate off of a baseline, right?
Yeah.
Is that cardiovascular health there?
You know, bullfighting,
destroying
skydiving.
A stage.
Yeah. Tom and I did our cardio for the next month, okay? What was supposed to be a 90-minute project turned out to be, what, like four hours? Yeah, we destroyed the stage in time for the next class to happen, so it was good. I thought I was going to yell that today for
sure.
Do you
know how many bloody noses I've had on that stage?
Oh, my
we
God.
We could probably tell you why, because we saw a plume of dust in the group training after we destroyed the stage. Yeah, that was good. It was a good time. Anything else you guys want to add to this point? Lean gaining. I think I should want to just really touch on lean gaining first. I know that we're going on and on, but is lean gaining better than doing a bulk? Okay, and when we talk about lean gaining, what we're talking about is it any better than just bulking? No. The only thing for lean gaining is if you're trying to stay a little bit more aesthetic, and I think this goes good for a lot of people that are in the modeling. Into modeling or doing anything like that. So I have a few people that are models, and that's what they do. That's their lifestyle, and that's their choice. And again, is it challenging? It certainly is. To maintain a rigid approach to gaining muscle mass is basically the same. It requires the same amount of energy and effort that it does when you're cutting. So the ability to stay rather rigid is challenging. Now, I will say that there is some time for like free meals or just meals which you don't track with a scale. Those are certainly things you should practice on a weekly basis.
But I don't know. I've done both. I've done, like, I guess you'd call it a dirty bulk. And I've also done lean gains on a couple of occasions. And once your calories get high enough, it's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, eventually your calories get so high, it's like, God.
You know what, though? And I have to. And I don't think it's much of the hunger or the during a cut, you crave things that you generally wouldn't. Like, I start to like tofu noodles, okay? And they're disgusting when I'm bulking. I'll never touch those, I know. But for me, it's not necessarily the food or the hunger or having satisfaction there as much as it's just, I just don't want to weigh everything. I want to be able to wake up, and the bulking part of it comes from, like, there are certain days when you're in a lean gaining phase where if you skip breakfast, you've pretty much ruined your day because you got to try to pack meals in, mm-hmm. and you're eating so many calories that you're stuffed all the time. There's no, like, I'm hungry. So even on those, I used to do like, you guys heard of like alternate day fasting where I would actually like fast for a day or eat very minimal calories for a single day.
Did you try liquid nutrition? Because I know, like, when I've done my bulks, that's been my trick, is juices, yeah. Protein shakes, and sure, like chocolate milk, like tons of liquids to like get it in.
Very minimal. Again, I never really like to drink my calories, but yeah, I would do Gatorades like during training. As a matter of fact, I used to put Gatorade, oatmeal, and protein inside of a glass to drink
disgusting.
It. Yeah, but I had my carbohydrate set at 685 at one point, so that was why. That was not a good idea. I'll never do that again. I just didn't feel good with fats. Fats made me so like full. I could eat more. I could consume more carbohydrate calories than I could anything else. So, and protein was actually really low too. I think I set that like 0.8 grams per pound, just because it was just
The discomfort of like bulking when you get into calories that high, to me in my mind, is very similar to the discomfort of cutting when you get down to very low macros. Like, anytime you truly want to make progress and be exceptional, there's going to be discomfort involved.
Yeah.
Whether it's deadlifting 800 pounds or dieting or bulking, like, there's always going to be some discomfort. You have to pick the flavor of discomfort that appeals to you the most.
No doubt about it. You can definitely draw parallels to both those scenarios. I know I can. I'd rather take the bulking problems.
I'd totally rather be stuffed.
I'd totally rather be stuffed and making choices than empty making choices. I agree with you, Tom. So to answer the question, should you bulk or should you cut? Clearly, there's really no one answer. There's no one answer to that.
Consult with a qualified coach.
Call a coach up, have a conversation. You know, have a conversation, see what you should be doing. We won't give you the exact thing to do unless you want to hire us for a period of time. But again, most of us will just do a consultation with you, see if it's a good fit, and then move on from there. So, good?
Yeah.
Sounds good to
me. Dana's falling asleep. She's missing her cats right now.
Oh, poor Dana.
My babies.
My night's just getting started. I don't know what you're talking about.
You two are night owls. I'm like.
Not really. I'm usually in bed by like 9:30, 10.
Are you?
Yeah.
I feel like you upload stories later, but maybe I just don't
every
have
once
it,
in a while.
Maybe. Any idea of time.
Yeah.
Ooh, can we do a podcast about sleep and recovery? I would love to do one on that.
Yes, right now I've been deep into biorhythms and sleep, so I'm totally ready for that one.
That could be fun.
Well, we're giving out the teasers. Thanks for listening, guys. I appreciate it. If you guys have any questions, you want to set up a consultation, feel free to reach out to us on our Instagram pages. You could also email team@upstateempirefit.com. We will give you more information. We'll get the questionnaire filled out, and we'll have you talking to a coach within 12 hours.
Probably even
that's
sooner.
That's the new stint. Probably sooner. Alyssa.
Probably text Alyssa.
Alyssa is fantastic. She was. Thank God she's taking it over. It's been a super relief. I know you guys can all say the
same.
Love you, babe. All right, guys. Thanks again.